Las Vegas, famous, fabulous playground of the West. A wide open town that never goes to sleep.
Vegas!
Vegas, baby, Vegas!
You're either in or you're out. Right now.
My best mates are going to Las Vegas this weekend. I'm told it's incredible.
Las Vegas, here we go!
Pack your bags and get ready for a different kind of Vegas experience with someone who knows Vegas inside and out. You're listening to Vegas Never Sleeps with Stephen Maggi.
From the early days of vaudeville and burlesque through radio, then television, and now a myriad of media outlets, the United States has always loved comedy. It's really part of our history from the 20th century on. And with us is one of the greats in the business. His name is Cliff Nesteroff. His new book is The Comedians, Drunks, Thieves, Scoundrels, and the History of American Comedy. A fascinating book about a fascinating topic. And Cliff, you were with us about 3 or 4 years ago, and we were talking about comedy as part of, you know, what brought up the great pop culture of the 50s and 60s when you came to television and so forth. First of all, though, what is it about comedy that we just as a society just love?
Well, that's hard to say. I think it's one of the great American art forms. People talk about how America did not produce many of its own art forms, with the exception of maybe jazz music or African-American music. But the reality is that comedy, and especially stand-up comedy, is a uniquely American art form, and it has influenced the world completely. And in the places like the UK and in Canada, where they also have stand-up scenes, it all kind of came from the creation and the genesis of stand-up here in America. So I think comedy remains popular in America because this is where it was born.
Absolutely. Let's talk about the early days. You talk about things like Prohibition really contributed to the success of comedy. Was it the things like vaudeville and burlesque that really brought the whole concept of stand-up really to an American audience?
Essentially. I mean, the phrase stand-up did not yet exist in the days of vaudeville. People were called comedians. But yeah, it was the first era where it became a common and popular accepted art form, although it really did evolve and transform, which is one of the reasons that if we were to try and look at an example of vaudeville comedy today, it almost seems like it's from the moon. You know, we don't see what is it about it that made people laugh. We can't connect to it. But that is just the generational evolution of any art form, that's especially comedy. It does not necessarily age well. But yes, in burlesque and vaudeville is where it really had its first mark as a popular art form. But back then, media wasn't what it was. So you can do the same act for 30 years and never encounter the same audience twice. So that also made it slightly a less creative art form in those days, because guys would find something that worked and they could do it in Des Moines, Chicago, New York. And without radio or TV or the internet spreading their act to the masses, there was not the pressure to continually create. So while it was an art form, and that is where it started, a lot of the times the guys doing it were not necessarily artists or artistic types.
Yeah, that's really interesting. That makes a lot of sense. So radio was really the first time when all of a sudden now the entire country at once could listen to the same thing. And I mean, some of the real genius really came out. I mean, when you think of like radio comedy and so forth, people like Jack Benny, you know, and what's great about that comedy is some of that still holds up today. I mean, you hear one of those Jack Benny jokes, if you get the idea of, you know, that he was a skinflint and that whole thing, that whole idea is your money or your life, and that long pause through it.
Right.
To this day, people still find that funny.
It's interesting. People today find that funny if they know Jack Benny's persona. If you are a young person and you were never introduced to the idea that he was a skinflint, that he was a penny pincher, that he was penurious, then that joke doesn't make sense, which is really an interesting thing. Jack Benny was so ingrained in the culture that he could do a joke like that in the 1950s without even, like, delivering the punchline. It would just be somebody saying, Mr. Benny, would you like to pick up the check? It's $100. And by not saying anything, he got a laugh because the joke was set up 20 or 30 years earlier when his character was established. That's very interesting and very rare. And you're right, it does hold up, but only if you have the context for it. For a young person who doesn't have that context, they won't laugh.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now, you know, the medium of radio was a little bit different in that it didn't have to be yucks every second, where you could build up to this type of thing, and comedians had the advantage of being on every week. They were able to develop these personalities that we're talking about, right?
Right, yeah. I mean, it was a very interesting thing for that reason. It was not really the culture that it is today, where if you don't get the ratings right away, the network starts tampering and pulls you off the air. Jack Benny had a long, slow build. So did Fred Allen. When people talk about Fred Allen being canceled, his competition were the 1950s quiz shows. He was off the air in 1949. It was a sad thing to see Fred Allen leave, but it's amazing he had already been on the radio since 1934. So here's a guy who had a 15-year career. That's very uncommon. Even a sitcom like Seinfeld was only on for 9 seasons, and although Seinfeld pulled the plug himself, that's a really long run by today's standards.
Yeah, absolutely. Now let's talk about the switch to television. Some of that old burlesque stuff came up again with Milton Berle and the big thing in the, you know, the late 40s, where he kind of started selling television sets, so to speak, bringing up. And then we saw some real genius come out. And I mean, you and I, the last time we talked maybe the greatest show of all time was like Phil Silvers. There was some really incredible stuff that, and again, refined stuff, not what you saw in burlesque, not even what you saw on radio, where you combine the visual and the audio. Really a great chance for comedy to shine, another step up, wasn't it? Early television.
Yeah, I mean, guys like Phil Silvers, Ernie Kovacs, and Sid Caesar added a new dimension to comedy. Milton Berle was essentially just doing his nightclub act on TV, and since he was one of the first, and really because he had so much confidence, he was a big star, because most people on TV, 48, 49, 50, did not know how to look into a camera. They did not know how to stand without coming across very awkward or stumbling over their words or reading off the cue card, obviously. Milton Berle has a broadcaster's competence because he had so much confidence with so much nightclub experience. But comedy became a little bit more sophisticated as television wore on. Guys like Phil Silvers came in, Sid Caesar, Ernie Kovacs, did brought new things to the medium. And once people realized that they were great, they realized that maybe Milton Berle wasn't as great as they had originally assumed. And as those other guys started to ascend, Milton Berle started to descend. And I used to say this a lot, that Sid Caesar was to comedy in the 1950s what Marlon Brando was to drama. He brought a new dimension and really stepped up the game. And by then, because of that, he kind of raised the bar, and people had to, not always, I mean, there was still a lot of dumb comedy on the air, but the Milton Berle style of comedy was less and less accepted on TV as guys like Sid Caesar and Steve Allen and Ernie Kovacs raised the bar.
You're right, and then some of the people from radio, the real greats like Bob Hope, Jack Benny and stuff, were able to make that transition, but as you said, not everybody was. Like you talk about Fred Allen, just not right for that medium, right? Mm-hmm. Wasn't that the problem with Allen?
Yeah, that's what they say. And even Jack Benny, it took a while for the TV show to become a hit. They stuck with it because he was a big star, but if you watch the first couple seasons of that show, it's pretty creaky. They're trying to figure out, how do we turn this radio show into a television program? But in the first couple seasons of Jack Benny's TV show, the radio show was still on the air, and that one was awfully more popular than the TV show because they had the formula down, they had the format down, they know how to get their laughs. But with TV, everything still was an experiment, so it really took a while for everything to click. And with Fred Allen, they say that he didn't have a face for TV. I don't really buy that, because there were lots of ugly people on early TV that succeeded. I mean, Milton Berle's not exactly a looker. Let's be honest here. But Fred Allen, I think they just didn't find the right format for him. They never actually transformed his radio show into a TV show. Instead, they made him the host of game shows. He was one of the first hosts of the Colgate Comedy Hour, and they tried to confine him to these corny sketches, which was not what Fred Allen was about. So in early TV, the way he shines the best is as a panelist on What's My Line, because he's just his own acerbic personality, off the cuff, often very witty, and I think that format worked for him. But when they tried to star him as the centerpiece of his own show, it just wasn't who Fred Allen was, and you could tell that he didn't want to be there on the screen. So I don't think it had so much to do that he had these kind of bags under his eyes, so much as they just did not know how to use him or what to do with him.
Yeah, and you know, you talk about a personality, just the right format. They had Groucho Marx do that quiz show, but really it was just about him being able to, talk off the cuff, and he just was so witty that it actually worked. I mean, and I guess enough people knew about Marx to know what to expect, too.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't about the game. It was a game show in which nobody cared about the game show, which is kind of a funny and interesting thing. It was all about showcasing Groucho Marx's wit. The one thing that's interesting about You Bet Your Life, which is the show we're mentioning here, that people don't realize, is that it was one of the first taped programs, both on radio and on TV. It was filmed for TV and edited later. It wasn't live. And same thing on radio. It was one of the first national radio shows that was not done live. It was one of the first beneficiaries of the Ampex tape machine, which had been liberated from Germany after the war, was manufactured there, brought over to America. Bing Crosby invested a gazillion dollars in it, and that's what they recorded the You Bet Your Life radio show on. So what they would do is they would roll for an hour and a half and let Groucho improvise, and then they would cut them down to a half hour. So only the witticisms that hit the mark remain. So here, Groucho Marx, who already was one of the wittiest people, is seen and heard as even wittier because they gave him these crutches to lean on and they cut it down, which is, of course, what comedy does today. But it was ahead of its time then. So here you had a man who was already hilarious, totally helped by emerging technology, which is also another one of the themes of my book, not just how comedy evolves, but how the evolution of technology, radio, TV, the internet, helps bolster comedy.
Yeah, that's why this book is a perfect Christmas gift, I got to tell you. I can't put it down. It's one of those things where you kind of get the whole thing. And, you know, let's fast forward today. We only got a couple minutes off, but let's fast forward to today. And we're seeing a lot of that stand-up comedy that, you know, from Bill Cosby, you know, and, you know, I know that's a bad word these days, but him, some of the stuff he did, to Seinfeld, to Ray Romano, all that kind of came back, and they made the situation comedies based on the comedy these guys were doing. That's where that the whole concept of stand-up is really the backbone of everything then.
Stand-up is from which every other genre of comedy comes, and if not stand-up, then at the very least, the live stage. There isn't a major late-night host you could name who doesn't have experience on the stage. Stephen Colbert came out of the Second City. Jimmy Fallon was an impressionist at the Improv in New York. All of these guys come out of stand-up. Craig Ferguson was a stand-up. David Letterman was a stand-up. Jay Leno was a stand-up. Earlier in the days of Steve Allen, Jack Parr, and Johnny Carson, those guys were more broadcasters than stand-ups, but they, may not have been stand-ups, but their time slot, 11:30 p.m., showcased every major stand-up of the 20th century and made a lot of them huge stars, from Woody Allen to the Smothers Brothers to Bill Maher and Roseanne. That time slot was very important. So I do argue in my book that stand-up was the most important of all the genres, and all the big comedy movie stars, all the big comedy TV stars that we love. I mean, Ellen DeGeneres, who is seen as you know, the top daytime TV shows, again, comes out of stand-up. Larry David creates the Seinfeld show with Jerry Seinfeld. Larry David did stand-up. So everybody you could name came from the live stage, from Albert Brooks to Steve Martin. So I really think that this uniquely American art form that is stand-up comedy is also one of the most important art forms in the world.
Couldn't agree more. The book is The Comedians, Drunks, Thieves, Scoundrels in the History of American Comedy. Cliff, if we want to follow you online, where do we go?
Classic Showbiz on Twitter. Classic Showbiz.
We will do that. Cliff, love to have you on again. Great talking with you.
Thanks, Steve. It's a delight.
Please follow Vegas Never Sleeps on all social media platforms, including X, Facebook, and Instagram. And thanks for listening today. This is Stephen Manchi reminding you, Vegas never sleeps.
Vegas, here we go!
Attention, those of you looking to go on a fun vacation and see the world on the cheap. Today, the U.S. dollar is worth even more in other countries, so there's never been a better time to travel outside the USA. The dollar is worth over $1.30 in Canadian dollars, and it's the same for Australia. You can fly there today and have fun and maximize your travel dollar. Your U.S. dollar is worth over $3 in Brazilian reals, and it's worth over $18 in Mexican pesos. Plus, in Argentina, it's worth over $27 in Argentine pesos. Just think of the bargains you'll get. And the way you get the cheapest airfare to any destination is by calling Tickets That Cheap. Save up to 75% on your foreign vacation tickets. Don't wait. Call now.
802-317-1980. 802-317-1980. 802-317-1980. That's 802-317-1980.
Holy Gentle Giants dog food, Batman. I'm Burt Ward, Robin from the Batman TV series. I was the Caped Crusader, and now I'm the Canine Crusader. After rescuing and feeding 15,500 dogs for 23 years, my wife and I created a natural, low-fat, heart-healthy, made-in-America dog food and special feeding and care program designed to help all dogs live amazingly longer, healthier, happier lives. Our dogs are living as long as 27 healthy, active years. Yours can too. That's twice their normal lifespan and triple for some breeds. Would you like your dog to live as long as 27 years and still be active and healthy? Gentle Giants dog food is complete nutrition for all dogs and puppies, all ages and sizes, and is different from other dog foods without the greasy coating and high fat content that can shorten your dog's life. Try our Gentle Giants life-enhancing dog food for the longer, healthier, happier life of your dog.
Boy, man, I had a rough night's sleep. Boy, whew, I got a letter from the IRS yesterday, and I just couldn't sleep. Man, I'm dying here. Somebody help me.
IRS problems affect more than just your finances. If you're ready to take back control of your life and you owe more than $10,000, you need to call the Tax Doctor. Their expert staff can immediately protect you from the IRS and state collectors and get you the best possible tax settlement guaranteed. The IRS has recently released new programs geared in helping struggling taxpayers, where you may qualify to settle your tax debt and wipe out up to 85% or more of what you currently owe. If you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes, call the Tax Doctor right now. See if you qualify to pay less.
800-520-0735. 800-520-0735. 800-520-0735. That's 800-520-0735.